You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, June 18th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So happy you could join us here live from Rolla G Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, where the sun has returned. We're going to have a nice 75-degree day today. I know the rest of you throughout the country are sweltering through the 90s, but hey, that's why I chose to live in the Pacific Northwest. Great weed and great weather, at least 4 months out of the year. Anyway, joining us from another place with some fantastic weed is our own Priscilla Seibin, our news director out there in Colorado. How are you doing, Priscilla?
Great. It's hump day. Bounce, wah, wah.
All right. We got a little attitude going on our Wednesday. Loving that. Hump day. Absolutely. And we're looking forward to getting to the end of this week. That's for sure. Priscilla is going to bring us our 420 radio news right after the first break. And we got some headlines today. Again, New York State, they're still working on that medical marijuana bill and the governor is doing everything he can to stop it. Hillary Clinton has some new opinions on marijuana decriminalization, legalization, and medical use. Delaware is fighting for decriminalization. North Carolina is stumbling on its CBD only bill, and cities in Maine may be voting on legalization this election. So we'll give you all of that in the 420 Radio News with Priscilla Seibin right after the first break. And then after the news, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at something that's been generating a lot of ink this week. And that is the announcement by a Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer, a retired officer, that he's invented Cannabix, known as the pot breathalyzer, and is looking to export that to the United States. We'll tell you what's wrong with the pot breathalyzer in our Behind the Headlines segment. Then when we get into our second half hour, we're going to talk about things going on here in the state of Oregon with respect to our dispensary law and the people who are trying to abide by it. Story comes out today featuring a couple of my friends, Don Morse and Sarah Bennett, who were busted by Washington County for running a dispensary. We'll tell you how their case turned out and what they're up to now. And then at the end of the show, in the Radical Rant, when it comes to statewide legalization, go pro or go home. We're going to look at Oregon, Arizona, and California and their examples that show us if you don't have big name, big money support, your legalization effort is doomed. All of that coming up in our first hour. And then in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, we're going to be taking your calls at 971-533-7111, where you can be the voice of the marijuana nation. Tell us what's happening in your neck of the woods. If you've got questions, comments, or concerns, you can dial us live at 971-533-7111. Also, on shows coming up soon, tomorrow, we are going to have an exclusive interview with two of the people striking against the campaign for the restoration and regulation of hemp, the other legalization campaigns here in the state of Oregon. They are complaining about not being paid, and when they are paid, their paychecks bounced. So we will talk to two of those strikers on the show tomorrow. Also coming up, we have got great episodes of Gordon Green's Music Planet coming up tonight at 8 p.m. Tomorrow night, we've got a brand new Big Daddy Fink Funky Roller Rink, Thursday Night Funk at 8 p.m. And then Friday night with Herb Thrasher, we'll be on the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour with our special call-in guest, Danny Danko from High Times Magazine. He's going to preview the Cannabis Cup coming up next weekend, which both Herb Thrasher and I will be attending in Santa Rosa, California. Plenty of stuff coming up on the Russ Belville Show, so stay tuned. Priscilla Seibin and the news are next.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio,
Fighting Prohibition Since 2012. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. Hemp Beach TV, replaying Fridays at 12 Pacific on 420radio.org. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
Hi, folks. This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, June 18, 2014. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo attempts to run the clock out on medical marijuana. On Tuesday, the governor says he'll not sign the latest iteration of the medical marijuana bill that was amended late Monday to make the Thursday legislative signing deadline. Lawmakers took out coverage for diabetes, lupus, and post-concussion syndrome, and reduced the possession limit from 2.5 to 2 ounces. But Governor Cuomo complains that not including a ban on marijuana smoking and a 5-year sunset provision is a deal breaker. Lawmakers have pressed the governor's office to provide medical marijuana language that the governor would approve, but the governor explains, quote, "I don't want to get into the negotiations with the Senate leadership and the Assembly leadership," end quote. Medical marijuana is supported by 88% of voters and 93% of Democrats in recent polls. But it remains unclear whether the legislature will put Governor Cuomo in the uncomfortable position of vetoing a popular issue in an election year.
Well, they should. They should force him to have to live up to this when, you know, so many people, more than 9 out of 10 Democrats, support medical marijuana. He should be forced to have to explain to each and every one of them why he wants to keep medicine away from sick cancer and AIDS patients, why he thinks people with lupus deserve to remain in pain, why people that have post-concussion syndrome should be denied the most effective medicine for post-concussion syndrome. This is political hardball, and he needs to have to pay a price on this. If the Senate and the Assembly compromise any further on this bill, it's just going to lead the next reticent governor, like maybe Pennsylvania's Tom Corbett, to know that they can just keep whittling away at medical marijuana, whittle away as much of it as they can, and everybody on our side will just capitulate to it. It's time for us to take a stand, draw a line in the sand, and say no more. You can cut no more from this bill. His sudden reticence to want to sign this bill and sudden need to discuss these different issues he has are things he could have brought up 2 months ago when this bill was first being proposed. The fact that he left it until now to talk about it shows that he's not negotiating in good faith. It just shows he's trying to run out the clock and try to avoid any controversy on medical marijuana before he has to face re-election. Let's not let him avoid that controversy. Let's put him in a bad position and force him to have to veto a medical marijuana bill, and then explain that to Democratic voters.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told CNN's Christine Amanpour that, quote, "there should be availability of medical marijuana for patients, quote, in extreme medical conditions." Secretary Clinton's latest remark represents a, quote, evolution in her position that evokes comparison to President Obama's evolution on the topic of gay marriage. as majority public support for both topics continues to grow. Quote, at the risk of committing radical candor, said Secretary Clinton, I have to say, I think we need to be very clear about the benefits of marijuana use for medicinal purposes. I don't think we've done enough research yet, although I think for people who are in extreme medical conditions and who have anecdotal evidence that it works, there should be availability under appropriate circumstances. But I do think we need more research because we don't know how it interacts with other drugs. End quote. When Secretary Clinton was running for president in 2008, she shared her opinion on marijuana legalization when she said, quote, I don't think we should decriminalize, but we ought to do research into what, if any, medical benefits marijuana has, end quote. In her latest interview, Secretary Clinton said, quote, on recreational, states are the laboratories of democracy. We have at least two states that are experimenting with that right now. I want to wait and see what the evidence is, end quote. As for whether she, like her husband, quote, tried marijuana and didn't like it, didn't inhale and never tried it again, end quote, Secretary Clinton emphatically stated, quote, absolutely not. I didn't do it when I was young. I'm not going to start now.
Well, perhaps Secretary Clinton, you ought to start now. Maybe it would lighten you up a little bit. This is going to be so fun to watch as the mounting evidence for medical marijuana continues to grow as more than, you know, by the time 2016 rolls around, I think we'll have more than half of the states with some sort of medical marijuana program. We'll have four states with marijuana legalization and another four looking to legalize. Democrats are going to be like trying to turn around a cruise ship. It's going to be slow. It's going to be a long arc, but they've got to find a way to turn around on this because they're going to lose their base. And at any minute now, I tell you, the young Republicans are going to start picking up on this issue and they're going to start leaving the Democrats behind. Hillary Clinton is just the first of these Democrats to attempt this pivot on their marijuana positions. And, you know, I welcome anybody who's going to want to support marijuana legalization, but I'd rather have someone who has always supported it because it's the right thing to do, not someone who is coming around to support it because it's the politically expedient thing to do.
Lawmakers in Delaware have amended a marijuana legalization proposal to be just a marijuana decriminalization proposal. Democrat Representative Colleen Healy is sponsoring the legislation that would reduce Delaware's criminal misdemeanor for marijuana possession, which could lead to 6 months in jail and an $1,150 in fines, to a non-arrestable civil citation with a $250 fine that doubles if unpaid in 90 days. The legislation had opposed to simply legalized possession of up to an ounce of marijuana, but that was strongly opposed by the Delaware State Police, who, along with other law enforcers, made over 2,600 arrests for marijuana possession in 2013. The new decriminalization proposal has made it out of committee and awaits the vote of the full House, which is only in session for another week.
Yeah, it's a shame that Delaware has kind of wimped out on going for full legalization and has reduced it to just decriminalization. But it puts them along in line with most of the other states in the region that have marijuana decriminalization. Only New Jersey, New York, and New Hampshire, of all the New England states, still maintain criminal arrests for small amounts of marijuana. So Delaware is at least making the right move. And reducing this to just a fine, you know, $250 fine for an ounce, would make it the 20th state to decriminalize marijuana. It's a shame it's happening so late in the session, kind of like the New York situation. They've only got one more week to work on this. Let's hope these lawmakers can put it on the fast track and end the arrest of over 2,600 Delaware residents every year for marijuana possession.
North Carolina is stumbling in its attempt to enact the strictest CBD-only medical marijuana law in the nation. A hearing scheduled yesterday to discuss CBD-only legislation was canceled just before it was to start, with no indication that the hearing would be rescheduled anytime soon, if at all. The bill would allow for the use of high CBD / low THC cannabis oil only by people suffering from intractable epilepsy. It would not be available for epileptic children, only adults 18 years of age or older. The epileptic adult must have first been evaluated by a neurologist and must have tried at least 3 non-cannabis treatment options before being allowed to try non-psychoactive CBD oil. Patients would also have to pay $50 to be tracked in a state database accessible to law enforcement.
Wow, this is one of those scenarios where, gee, I'm really sorry this didn't get a hearing. I mean, what a terrible bill we're talking about here. It's just amazing to me that we have this Sanjay Gupta documentary and everybody sees the miracle of this little girl healing from her epilepsy thanks to CBD oil. These states rush out to make these CBD oil bills. And even that's too much for North Carolina. Even non-psychoactive CBD oil for kids. Well, that's too much. It can't be for kids. You have to be 18 or older. 18 or older. So like you're going to turn to some parent who's got a 5-year-old who's seizing 100 times a day, and you're going to say, gotta wait till he's 18. Gotta wait another 13 years if he lives that long. This is just cruel. It's cruel to give these people hope like this, and so cruel to narrow it down so much, so afraid they are that some healthy person might smoke pot. They've got to narrow it down so much that it's not smokable plant. It's just CBD oil. It's not for cancer or AIDS or anything else that could help. It's just for epilepsy. It's not for anybody that has epilepsy, just people 18 and older. And not for anybody 18 and older that has epilepsy, but they have to have been verified by a neurologist. But not just verified by a neurologist. They have to have tried 3 other treatments and not had them work before they can try the cannabis that they know would work. Can you imagine how frustrating that must be to somebody who's suffering for epilepsy to be told that cannabis is your medicine of last resort? Go ahead and try all the pharmaceuticals first. Let those fuck up your liver. Let those clog up your bowels. Let those reduce your sex drive. Let those make you into a walking zombie. And then if that doesn't work for you, try another one and see if that works for you. And if that doesn't work for you, try some surgery. Let's cut into your brain and see if that works. And if that doesn't work for you, well, then we'll give you the non-psychoactive, non-addictive cannabis oil with CBD only as a last resort. It's just cruel.
That's some backwards shit. Residents of York, Maine could be voting on a symbolic marijuana legalization measure in this November's election. Petitioners for Marijuana Policy Project collected over 200 signatures to present the legislation initiative to the Board of Selectmen, the city council that must approve petitions on the municipal ballot. Similar petitions are ongoing in the cities of Lewiston, where 350 of 850 signatures have been gathered, and South Portland, with 200 of 950 needed signatures. The petition asks that possession of an ounce or less of marijuana for personal purposes be made legal for adults 21 and over. Last election, voters in Portland approved the legalization petition, but law enforcement explained they would still enforce Maine state laws on marijuana. Maine, as a state, has already decriminalized the possession of up to 2.5 ounces of marijuana for personal use, with no arrest and a civil fine costing $600.
So you might look at this situation and say, well, you know, it's just symbolic. These towns, if they pass these legalizations, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't really legalize marijuana. And gee, why bother? I mean, you've already got decrim for 2.5 ounces. It's not as if, you know, Maine is a really tough place to be a marijuana smoker. But the point behind these things is this is how professionals pass state legalization. This is how reform is done, especially on the East Coast, where you don't have the possibility of a ballot initiative measure, although you do in Maine. I believe Maine is an initiative state. The point being, though, that they don't start at the state level. They don't start at the state level and say, hey, we're going to legalize for the whole state. They go city by city and slowly build the the momentum for legalization. They can point out that, hey, we've passed this in so many cities, and they all agree with this. This is the exact game plan that was fought in Massachusetts successfully. They went to over 30 cities in Massachusetts and passed these non-binding public policy questions about marijuana decrim and medical. And before you know it, they had medical getting passed, they had decrim getting passed, and in 2016, they might even pass full-scale legalization in Massachusetts. Start from the ground up, people. That's how it's done. They did the same thing in Colorado, Priscilla. They passed stuff in Denver first before they tried anything statewide, right?
Yeah, now we're taking it up.
All right. Speaking of that, it's 4:20 in Denver, so we got to let you go to the important safety meeting. And hi also to Lively Libra out there, our brand new bud tender, all the way from the state of Iowa to bud tender in Colorado. What an amazing transformation. We'll see you later. Talk to you tomorrow.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. All right, welcome back, folks. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And the headline I want to take a look at today is this invention of the so-called pot breathalyzer. And all it's doing here is just solidifying junk science. You may have read by now or heard from us that a retired Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer has invented the pot breathalyzer. It's the inevitable and predictable response to our years of demanding that we regulate marijuana like alcohol. Despite the fact that driving while impaired on cannabis has been illegal in all 50 states ever since people have been getting impaired on cannabis, the framing of treat it like alcohol demands that we do just that and implement a roadside technology for police officers to determine who is too high to drive. Now, treat it like alcohol was a helpful analogy to get people for whom legal marijuana was an abstract fantasy to a place where they could understand that regulation of a social drug is preferable to its prohibition. Now, people were already familiar with legal alcohol and all its ramifications, and people could remember prohibition of alcohol and all its negatives. So, treat it like alcohol helped them to understand that there could be a regulatory system that would be better than prohibition when it comes to marijuana. It's likely that marijuana legalization would not have passed as soon as it did without the frames of marijuana is safer than alcohol and regulate marijuana like alcohol. They were useful analogies. The problem with the analogy is that marijuana and alcohol are not analogs. Alcohol is a toxic hydrophilic molecule, that means water soluble, with a verifiable dose-dependent ability to impair its users on a weight-related basis. You give me 100 persons of weight X who drink amount Y, and their resulting blood alcohol content, or BAC, will be a fairly consistent indicator of their physical and mental impairment. Now, sure, you might get one or two outliers. You might get the obese alcoholic with massive tolerance, or
You might get the petite abstainer who's drunk once a year on a glass of champagne on New Year's Eve. But for the vast majority of people, a BAC of 0.08 or above is a very strong indicator they're too drunk to drive. On the other hand, the THC in cannabis is a non-toxic lipophilic molecule. That means it's fat soluble, and it affects every user differently. It even affects the same user differently depending on many factors. You can't guarantee with any accuracy that someone with, say, a reading of 5 nanograms of active THC per milliliter of blood is going to be too impaired to drive. Some long-term marijuana users, like me, may awaken after 8 hours of sleep with levels above 5 nanograms. Many marijuana users won't even exhibit signs of roadway impairment at levels above 20 or even 50 nanograms, as demonstrated by Seattle news station KIRO when they did an experiment with 3 marijuana users of varying degrees of use and tolerance. The pot breathalyzer fulfills law enforcement's desire for a simple bright line magic number that allows them to arrest drivers for marijuana use. Its inventor explains that the current model can only detect THC in the lungs that is indicative of use within the past 2 hours. That would be perfect for most of the states, he explains, that have so-called zero-tolerance laws for marijuana use by drivers, where the detection of any amount of THC means the state has proved the driver was impaired. He also intends to improve the technology to determine the amount of THC to handle states like Washington and Colorado that have imposed a 5-nanogram limit. But the pot breathalyzer still does not tell us whether anyone behind the wheel was too impaired to drive. It just tells us whether they had used marijuana recently. That, I fear, will evolve to become the new standard for marijuana users behind the wheel. It won't matter how impaired we are behind the wheel. It will just matter how soon we've gotten behind the wheel. Can you imagine the uproar if someone suggested a law where drinking a single beer meant an automatic 2-hour no driving requirement? I mean, it seems to me quite discriminatory that we are expecting pot users to not drive for 2 hours, but we don't hold that requirement for alcohol users. Under the current law, I, as a 240-pound man, could slam 5 shots of tequila in 20 minutes and immediately get behind the wheel, but my 0.76 blood alcohol content would not by itself prove I was too impaired to drive. If we're really going to treat marijuana like alcohol, we need to emphasize that the way we treat alcohol-using drivers is by proving they are too impaired to drive by their blood chemistry. That's something even the U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Commission to this day says is, quote, inadvisable to try to determine with marijuana consumption. Why don't we just continue to treat marijuana drivers the way we've been treating marijuana drivers for decades? By proving they're too impaired to drive by observation and roadside sobriety tests. It's not as if marijuana legalization invents marijuana and cars. We've already been dealing with this quite successfully. Ah, the marijuana. I knew it was coming, folks. I knew the marijuana breathalyzer was only a few years away, a year or two. Wait till they get the V-chip perfected. This is one where they can take a pinprick of blood, put it on a glass slide, and determine accurately within nanograms of something like 50 different drugs that you might have taken. Won't be long before the Supreme Court says a little pinprick, like a diabetes check, is not an unconstitutional search. Mark my words.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. New Approach Oregon is a coalition of Oregon citizens who believe that treating marijuana use as a crime has failed, costing taxpayers millions in law enforcement resources. Our approach will regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana for adults in Oregon. We can move Oregon forward and create new revenue for critical services. Visit our website at newapproachoregon.com or our page on Facebook at New Approach Oregon. Thank you. Check out our Wednesday replay partners beginning at 10 Pacific with Hemp Radio from California. At 11 Pacific, we've got Drug Truth Network Cultural Baggage from Texas. At 12 Pacific, Cannabis Network Radio from Florida. And at 1 Pacific, Free Weed from Danny Danko from New York. Right here on 420radio.org. Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time to talk about a couple of friends of mine here in the state of Oregon, Sarah Bennett and Dawn Morse. The story comes across from the Oregonian entitled Criminal Case Against the Human Collective in Tigard Winds Down. Before I explain the case, let me explain a little bit about Oregon geography and politics. I'm in Portland, of course, in Multnomah County, which is a long, thin county that borders the Columbia River. It's, just south of Vancouver, Washington, just across the border. And we are sometimes referred to as the People's Republic of Portland. We're known as being a very liberal, very progressive kind of area, right? God forbid that you don't recycle your cans or you're caught with a styrofoam cup. Oh, my God. Anyway, we're kind of the progressive side of things. You know, when people think Portland, when they think Oregon, Portlandia, hippies, hipsters, all that kind of stuff, it's absolutely true. But like many liberal counties, we have a bedroom county adjoining us that's hyper-conservative. And you see this all throughout the country, right? Like you got in California, you got your Orange County, which is the Los Angeles area bastion of conservatives, right? All over the place. You have situations like this. Austin, Texas, and its suburbs, for example. And in Oregon, in the Portland area, our suburb is Washington County. Now, Washington County, very conservative county, just over the ridge. You got to kind of go through a tunnel and over a hill to get to Washington County. And it's kind of the bedroom community of Portland. It's also the corporate home to Nike. Has the Nike World Campus is what it's called. It's huge. It's gorgeous, too. I actually had a teaching job there once. It's amazing. They cater the lunches and everything. So you got this conservative, kind of well-heeled, rich bedroom community out there in Washington County. And Washington County is headed by a sheriff. I forget the guy's name, but the sheriff out there, very anti-medical marijuana. Very, very anti. Now, we've also had dispensaries. Now, I know that in 2012 or 2013, we just passed our SB 3460, which was our bill that legalized medical marijuana dispensaries, created a system of licensing. And now there's some 90 licensees out there that are doing business as medical marijuana dispensaries. Prior to that bill being passed, though, we had about 4 or 5 years of quasi-dispensaries running. I don't want to call them quasi. They were actually dispensaries. They were just quasi-legal. The situation in Oregon was that a patient could reimburse a grower for the cost of supplies and equipment and utilities necessary to grow their medical marijuana. But Oregon had never legalized dispensaries when it passed a medical marijuana law. These dispensaries evolved out of patient need. Now, a lot of these dispensaries that evolved out of patient need did this on kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge basis, right? Since the dispensaries weren't technically legal, what they billed themselves as were farmers markets or reimbursements or access points. And the way they'd work, some of them would have individual growers who would come in and like a cube farm, right? There'd be like 4, 5, 6, 7 cubicles. And you could go to one cubicle where the guy would have jars of cannabis and choose amongst his jars of cannabis which ones you wanted. You could go to 2 or 3 of them if you wanted to. But each one of them was conducting a transaction with you. You weren't transacting with the building or the organization. You were transacting with one grower. And of course, the wink, wink, nudge, nudge was, I am not buying marijuana from you because that would be illegal. I am merely reimbursing you for the cost of your supplies, utilities, and equipment necessary to grow marijuana. And the other thing our law states is that you cannot, it explicitly states you cannot reimburse someone for their labor. And yet, at every dispensary you went to in Oregon, whether or not the marijuana was grown outdoors in big, huge plots that were, you know, fueled by the sun, or they were grown indoors in small plots that were fueled by high-pressure sodium lights, whether someone was growing 24 plants and producing in bulk, or someone was growing 2 plants and just producing some boutique weed, whether it was OG Kush, Sativa, Indica, didn't matter. Everybody's supplies and utilities somehow always came up to $10 a gram. Uniformly across the board, right? So the wink, wink, nudge, nudge here was that, yeah, right. Your expenses cost $10 a gram. Sure it did. Sure it did. That's $280 an ounce. When we have the figures to show that the highest cost, even including labor, for growing an ounce of weed, if you're growing it one grower in a 6 mature, 18 immature plant cycle, you could get that cost down to $50 an ounce. And yet they're charging $10 a gram, right? So obviously everybody knew what was going on here. Everybody was in on the wink, wink, nudge, nudge game of, yeah, I'm reimbursing you for your supplies and utilities. Because, shit, $10 a gram is a pretty good price. In fact, some places, you know, you could get as low as $5 a gram in Oregon. And, of course, if you bought in bulk, reimbursed someone for their supplies and utilities in bulk, you could get quite a discount. Some points where I've seen really quality marijuana going for as low as $150 an ounce. Well, Human Collective, which was being run by my friends Sarah Bennett and Don Morris, did not operate that way. While everyone else was playing wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and fast and loose with the reimbursement amounts, Human Collective examined the law and tried to find a way in which many growers could contribute. All of their supplies, utilities, and expenses were accurately tracked, and then the medicine given out to the patients who would actually reimburse for the actual costs. Now, whether that's legal, quasi-legal, or another wink, wink, nudge, nudge is up to the listener to decide. But compared to everyone else who was running one of these quasi-legal dispensaries, Sarah Bennett and Don Morse were doing it as legally as possible, as above board, and as transparently as possible, to the point where they even had members of the county board, whatever it's called, touring their facility, where they even had the attorney general candidate at the time, Ellen Rosenblum, tour the facility and had lawmakers tour the facility to say, hey, this is what it could be. This is how responsible it could be. So after all that, the sheriff there came down hard on the Human Collective. Busted them all, arrested them all, raided them. They raided 16 different properties, their houses, their warehouses, their storage, everything. 16 different properties, seized thousands of dollars and hundreds of marijuana plants. They were accused of selling marijuana and charged with multiple drug felonies. These terrible, terrible, evil criminals who verified every single medical marijuana card that came in the door, who never distributed outside of the medical marijuana system, right? Doing everything they could to be above board, so much so that they're bringing in elected officials to tour the place, but the Washington County Sheriff didn't care, charged them with multiple drug felonies. Well, we've got the result of their case now. Their case has been settled now in plea agreements and probation. Basically, what happened is that Don Morris, age 54, and Sarah Bennett, age 38, pleaded guilty to possession of marijuana. Bennett pleaded guilty to 2 counts and Morse to 1. Bennett and her fiancé, David Nicholson, age 39, who have 2 young sons, were also accused of child endangerment and neglect, but those charges were dropped in exchange for their guilty pleas. So not only did the Washington County Sheriff shut down what was probably the most compliant dispensary in the state, he threatened a young mother with taking away her children and making her ineligible to volunteer at her kid's school for life. That was the threat he used to get them to get her to cop to some misdemeanor or to some marijuana possession charges. Now, the marijuana possession charges they pled guilty to were felonies, but their sentence was 1 year of probation. And if Sarah and Don follow the terms of their probation, their convictions will be reduced from felony to misdemeanor marijuana possession. So this was a crime that was so great, that was so egregious, the cops, the sheriffs felt the need to raid them and shut them down, charge them with multiple felonies, including child endangerment. And the result of the whole thing, a year of probation and a misdemeanor if they complete their probation. So it's clear there wasn't any crime going on that required the jailing of dangerous people. It's clear that the Washington County Sheriff just doesn't like marijuana and wanted to shut down the marijuana business. Now, here's the irony of it all. Morse and Bennett are allowed to be in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. Under the law, they can't be discriminated against for that, right? They can still be patients under the law. And they're now operating Human Collective 2, which they set up literally 9 blocks away from their old location, just over the county line. They were just barely inside Washington County. They moved 9 blocks down the road. They're now inside Multnomah County. They're running Human Collective 2. They have one of the HB 3460 dispensary licenses, and they're doing exactly what they had been doing in Washington County, but now it's perfectly legal. So this is just insane. And really, from the cops' perspective, it completely backfired what they did. Don Morse, I know Don Morse. I've met him on a number of occasions here in Oregon at various events and functions. And Don was always just kind of a, you know, grower guy. He likes marijuana, likes growing marijuana, likes helping people out, getting them their marijuana. But he's not a political guy. He wasn't really, you know, that much into activism. According to the story, Morse said the case spurred him to become politically active and push for the state's dispensary law. So, good work, Washington County Sheriff. You created an activist who helped make the law so that people can operate legal dispensaries, and they will be operating legal dispensaries just 9 blocks away from where they did before. Fat lot of good all that police work, did you, huh? Now, also according to Morse, he says, quote, Nicholson. Nicholson's the other person. I forgot to mention, where's Nicholson's list? David Nicholson, who's the, who's Sarah Bennett's fiance. He was running a grow shop that was next door to Human Collective. His, garden supply business was closed, even though his store wasn't linked to the medical marijuana program in any way. He's now working as a consultant. And he says, quote, I'm very much in the marijuana scene now where I wasn't before. It's ironic, end quote. But of course, you talk to the folks in Washington County. Brandon McKee, the senior deputy district attorney in Washington County, said the case made clear that the sale of marijuana, quote, wouldn't be tolerated in Washington County. We feel like we accomplished that. We shut down a major drug dealing operation. Major drug dealing operation. That's what they think. And so, considering the fact that they are operating a dispensary now, basically doing the same thing they were doing before, I guess Brandon McKee thinks all 90 licensees of the medical marijuana program that are running dispensaries are engaged in major drug dealing operations. Folks, if we were talking about shutting down somebody who was running a meth lab and hanging out around the high schools, dealing bindles to sophomores, then you can say you shut down a major drug dealing operation. What you shut down was a commercial building with security and lighting that was getting medicine to sick people and verifying that they were registered with the state for the right to do so. And dinosaurs like Brandon McKee and the Washington County Sheriff are just going to have to be eventually swept out of office by the growing public sentiment that understands that we're talking about medicine here. Now, Bennett says she had to cop to the plea because child welfare workers, they added on the child neglect and endangerment accusations. This is sick as well. Using a young mother's own kids as leverage to try to get her to cop to a crime that she's now committing legally. This is the insanity that we have under these laws until we get it fully legalized. And we still have other prosecutions going on throughout the state. Four operators of the 45th parallel, my friends, Bill Espenson and Carrie and Kelly and another, were tried this spring and found guilty of multiple drug felonies and racketeering charges. They're all going to be doing years in prison. In Southern Oregon, in Medford, Lori and Lee Duckworth, also good friends of mine, are set for trial in July for, again, running dispensaries that are now completely legal. I am sick of having to make lists of friends to visit in prison. And you'll understand a little bit more of why I'm so passionate about my next radical rant coming up right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, firedeuplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedeuplawyer@gmail.com. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
One joint contains as much cancer-causing tar as four cigarettes. Marijuana, it's more harmful than we all thought.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 42420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio.
Handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality.
The century you have slurred the meaning of the words, we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You gotta ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. 50 after the hour, and given the recent list of my friends who are now doing prison time for my friends running the dispensary in Ontario, prison time for my friends, well, maybe, they still haven't been to trial yet, but possible prison time waiting for my friends who ran a dispensary in Medford, current prison time for Dr. Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer, who ran, you know, medical marijuana grows for cancer patients. She's a breast cancer survivor. He's a hemophiliac. The more of my friends end up in prison for marijuana crimes, the less patience I have with well-meaning but ultimately naive grassroots groups who think they can pass statewide legalization with best wishes, volunteers, and hopes. Folks, when it comes to statewide legalization, go pro or go home. Now, this comes to me basically because of the headache that's happening here in the state of Oregon with our two different legalization campaigns. We got the New Approach Oregon campaign, and they've raised over $1 million and surpassed 100,000 signatures, right? They're well on their way to making the ballot with a legalization measure that's quite liberal as far as giving us 8 ounces of usable marijuana, 1 ounce of concentrates, 16 ounces of edibles, 72 ounces of tinctures, a $1,250 commercial license, no limits on being vertically integrated or not vertically integrated, and a cap of $1.25 a gram in taxes. That's a pretty awesome legalization. And yet, we still have another group, the Campaign for the Restoration and Regulation of Hemp, CRRH, that decided there was a big need to move forward with a different legalization. Now, CRRH is in the news, and we will be speaking to two of these picketers tomorrow on the show. But CRRH is being picketed by its signature gatherers, who walked off the job on June 9th. The canvassers, who've organized as the United Campaign Workers, posted a demand letter to CRRH complaining about late and bounced paychecks and CRRH's failure to reimburse travel expenses. Now, CRRH was the same group that tried to pass OCTA last year, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, in 2012. It also tried to pass the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act in 2008. It also worked on the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act in 2006. And every time, it's there, pretty much just variations on a theme. Its chief petitioner, Paul Stanford, has this fantasy that if all of the marijuana in Oregon that's grown is then sold to a state agency, that that would comport with the 1961 Single Convention Treaty that says any signatory to the treaty that grows cannabis must grow it and supply it to one government organization, right? This is why the United States has the University of Mississippi Pot Farm, right? Because under the 61 treaty, the U.S., which signed the treaty, can grow cannabis so long as it's controlled in one government kind of facility, the University of Mississippi Pot Farm. So Paul Stanford believed that if he wrote this OCTA where all the Oregon weed was going to one government organization, the Oregon Cannabis Commission, that would comport with the 61 treaty. And then if the federal government sued, they'd have a defense under the treaty. Of course, it ignores the fact that Oregon is not a signatory to the treaty, the United States is, and that no political subdivision of the United States can consider itself one of the entities, one of the national entities that the treaty covers. Every legal and constitutional expert I've talked to on this has explained to me how ludicrous this entire idea is. But despite that, Stanford and CRH went ahead. And in 2012, they went ahead with the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. Now, OCTA in 2012 failed with 46.5% of the vote in the same election year when Washington and Colorado were passing legalization with 55% of the vote. So how could the Oregon measure, and presumably Oregon being a state that's a little more pot-friendly than Washington and maybe as pot-friendly as Colorado, how could Oregon do 8.5 points worse than Washington and Colorado? Well, because Paul Stanford thought that the OCTA should have unlimited personal possession and unlimited personal cultivation. He thought that's something the voters would be fine with. Sure, you can grow an entire football field of marijuana and store 3 tons of it in your garage, just as long as you're not selling it. Everybody saw through that. And then on top of that, that whole cannabis commission idea, you know, everybody has to sell to this one central wholesaler. In the 2012 version of OCTA, he had 5 of the 7 positions that control that board to be selected by the growers themselves. That's right. He was going to set up a state wholesale commission where 5 of the 7 board members were growers themselves, and that commission would set the prices that would be paid to the growers when they sell the marijuana. Can you say monopoly, people? So yeah, everyone saw through that as well. And that caused, you know, all the newspapers in the state to roundly criticize it, and most of the political observers to, you know, denounce it. And sure enough, it didn't get any political support. It didn't get any big name funding from Drug Policy Alliance or Marijuana Policy Project or any of the other millionaires or billionaires out there. And it failed miserably. So this time around, as 2014 is coming around, it's clear that there's a serious professional group of Oregonians who want to move forward with 2014. Even though MPP said wait till 2016, a lot of these people said we're going to go for 2014. But before they went for 2014, they made sure they had the support of the Drug Policy Alliance. They made sure that there were going to be some high-profile supporters of it, and they made sure they were going to get 6-figure donations on a regular basis to help fund the damn thing. So you might think, gosh, you know, we tried our legalization in 2012. It didn't work. Apparently the public doesn't like my version of it. I'll let these guys move forward and I'll put all my support and my manpower and my funding behind them, and we could all work together for legalization, right? Wrong. Stanford heard about New Approach Oregon being formed, having support from Drug Policy Alliance, getting 100,000 here, 150,000 there, 250,000 there, and decided, you know what the best thing would be to do? Is to run my own initiative to compete with that. Because apparently 8 ounces and 4 plants isn't enough. Now, Stanford decided to move forward with the same old OCTA that failed in 2012, but to fix it, because what he thought the problem was, oh, well, unlimited possession. Let's reduce that to 24 plants and 24 ounces, like the medical law. And the commission that had, you know, 5 growers select it, let's make sure that the governor selects that, and that'll fix everything. Ignoring the fact that Paul Stanford himself is political poison. Nobody wants to support it because he's the guy behind it. Nobody trusts him anymore. His legacy of financial misdeeds and fuck-ups and campaign failures and bounce checks and unpaid debts has turned everyone in the larger national organizations off from supporting him. Now, did that dissuade him? No. Kept moving forward, spending money, using volunteer time, getting people's hopes up, And this time, since he failed in 2012 with one initiative because he didn't have enough money and support, decided this time he'd go forward with two initiatives, a constitutional amendment and a statutory initiative. Well, the chickens have come home to roost. He's only gotten half the signatures he needs for the statutory and a third that he's gotten for the constitutional amendment.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Man, I just have to wonder how much farther ahead would New Approach Oregon be right now if the manpower and support in Oregon hadn't been diluted by Paul Stanford's delusions. Until next time, take care of each other.